Butterfield & Company is at Pizza Rock inside Green Valley Ranch.
13 times the Michael Jordan of the game.
It could possibly do that. It could possibly not.
Y'all behinds ain't no damn champions. You cheaters.
It's time for Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Oh, you tell them, Stephen A. You tell them exactly what they are. You tell those Houston Astros where they can take their apologies. You tell Altuve. You tell Bregman. You tell Jim Crane. We'll talk to Stephen A. Smith a little bit later on about his thoughts on the Houston Astros. You got Cofield and Company out here from Pizza Rock at Green Valley Ranch on a Thursday afternoon. Ryan McKinnell, Adam Candy in for Cofield this afternoon. Ari back at the studio. Angel getting us on the air out here at GVR. Get out here. Happy hour is going to get going here at Green Valley Ranch. Great specials on food and drink. Golden Knights game coming up a little bit later tonight. Big showdown for the Golden Knights in the Western Conference, taking on the best team in the Central Division, the St. Louis Blues. Ryan McKinnell, big one here for the Golden Knights this evening.
Absolutely, especially coming off whatever that was we saw in Minnesota a couple nights ago. And then obviously a couple factors with the Blues. Well, they're defending Stanley Cup champions, but as you know, and I think we talked about yesterday on the show, Jay Bouwmeester, everything happening with that, having a cardiac episode, quote-unquote, on the bench in their last game, and then him having to be revived via a defibrillator. You know, there's going to be added emotion with that. Also, it's the father's trip. So St. Louis has a lot to play for. They're defending Stanley Cup champs, obviously, and they're in a battle of their own. I'm one of the better teams in the NHL, and the Knights need to get on the right side of things, Adam, because when you look at this upcoming homestand and you look at the talent that is awaiting them, obviously tonight, defending Stanley Cup champs. Monday, the team that beat the Knights in the Stanley Cup 2 years ago, the Capitals. Oh, yeah, then the Islanders. Oh, yeah, then the Lightning. I mean, this is a devastatingly difficult homestand, and the Knights really need to get it off on the right foot.
Golden Knights will be home now through March 3rd with one quick trip to Anaheim mixed in there. More talk about what awaits the Golden Knights coming up. We know that this long homestand, as they told us last time they hit a long homestand, this is a big problem for them. Don't want to be at home too long. Yes, I am being sarcastic toward the Golden Knights, saying that it's a bad thing to be at home for too long. For the Rebels yesterday, being at home was not enough to get the job done. You know what? I did this again. I'm going to do it one more time. I'm going to start right back from the top of the three.
It's time for the three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
All right.
So the Knights were one.
The Knights were definitely one. And the Knights were right there off the top at number one. Number two will be the Rebels, unfortunately, as number two in the state last night as the Wolfpack wins in overtime at the T&M. Tough one for the Rebs as they have a buzzer beater three that could have tied it in overtime, go sideways. Back and forth game all the way through with a team right next to them in the standings, and that might have been the last really good chance for the Rebels to get a first round bye in the Mountain West tournament when you look at how the standings and the schedules shake down. We're going to talk to Donovan Stewart coming up at 3:45. Who called the game last night a little bit more about that with the Rebels, but Ryan does feel like a missed opportunity for the Rebs.
Well, sure, yeah. Is it, though? I mean, it was from the standpoint that when you look at the just one stat, and I think it was a stat that a lot of people were pointing at last night, and you're going to have that in close games, but you're also going to have it when the number just jumps at you, jumps out at you. Sub 50% from the free throw line? You can't win basketball games that way now. Positives you take away, you shot sub 50% from the line and you were still in it at the end and you had a chance to win, right? And then another positive you can take away, people will, as we know, when Reno comes to town, people will show up at the Thomas and Mack. You just have to give them a reason to. I like seeing the fervor, right, the passion a little bit. It's probably the only time this year, but it was nice to see.
You know, I was was out at the San Diego State game when they played them a little while back. Yeah. Great crowd for that game. One of the best I've seen for the Rebels in quite a long time. You can always count on getting that great turnout when the Wolfpack is in town. And now the Rebels are going to need a little more help along those lines here down the stretch. They have a very difficult schedule to close out, especially when you look at the teams that are 2 through 5 in the Mountain West that are right above them. We'll talk more to Donovan Stewart about that coming up in a few minutes with the Rebels. You know, I'm sure TJ Otzelberger might feel the need to apologize for that free throw performance last night, and apologies are they're the order of the day here on Cofield and Company. I was thinking as a Catholic kid growing up, going to Catholic school from the fourth grade on, you're taught the need to confess your sins and to tell them to the priest and to be absolved by God, to be absolved by Jesus and the Holy Spirit. And none of them will need to weigh in on the Houston Astros. I don't believe that any of those three have time to deal with what's going on in baseball right now. But but Ryan, I felt the love today from the Astros. I felt all of their sincerity and all of their heartfelt remorse. I was shocked when Jim Crane said he wanted to give back the championship. You know what? None of those things happened. None of that happened. The Houston Astros went out there today and gave you the most PR version of apologies that you will ever see. Brian, go ahead and tell me how it moved you.
You said PR. It did read like a PR stunt from this standpoint. A lot of the, and we're going to hear from various players or various people here throughout the show, but when you heard from the players, one of the things that they said, and you heard from everyone, you heard from Springer, you heard from Correa, you heard from Altuve, you heard from Bregman, you heard from everybody. One of the things they all said in unison was, hey, we had to get on the same page. We had to, you know, come out here and use this day to say what we were going to say. We all had to gather and figure out what we were going to say. Really, did you? Like, Candy, when a cop pulls you over and you're with some friends and you're doing some dumb stuff, right? The first thing that they do when they pull you out of the car is they separate you. And why is that? So you can't get your story straight, right? The Astros had every ability to get their story straight over these last few weeks, and they still bumbled it in the most magnificent of ways. And that goes from ownership all the way down to the players.
Well, see, I didn't even need to hear from Correa or from Bregman, Springer, Altuve, any of the players. I got all of the different stories in 55 seconds from the owner, Jim Crane. And we're going to hear from Jim Crane. No, not live on the show, but we have his audio from when he talked at spring training earlier today. Jim Crane gave every version of the Astros story, but all at one time. And it was really good because I felt like it was easy to follow when he said, yes, obviously, this didn't impact things. Yes, obviously it did impact things, and then it might have impacted things, but it also might not have. And I think when you are a shrewd businessman like Jim Crane, it's best to cover all bases at one time, and that way whatever someone says you said or didn't say, you can be like, yes, I did. No, I did. Yes, I did. No, I didn't. And that's what the Astros did today.
They came out
and they said everything and nothing all at the same time. We'll hear more from Jim Crane on the other side of our first break here. We're going to talk to Patrick Creighton later today from SB Nation Radio in Houston. He says that the Astros should have put two big middle fingers up to everybody and said, F you, we're going to go win again. Well, you know what? We'll talk to him more about that in just a moment. Coming up next, Jim Crane tells all, and I mean all.
The Three is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600. Now, back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Cofield and Company live from Green Valley Ranch. We're at Pizza Rock getting ready for the Vegas Golden Knights taking on the St. Louis Blues at T-Mobile Arena tonight. Great place to watch the game right down here at Pizza Rock. Happy hour is going to get going here momentarily. Great specials, great food and drink. I am a big fan of the meatballs. No, they are not my meatballs. Adam Hill informed me of that last time we were here together. They are his meatballs, so I will not say out loud that they are my meatballs. I will just say I love the meatballs.
Can't they be our meatballs?
Unfortunately not. I found this
out.
I
love the meatballs. You love the meatballs. Adam loves the meatballs, but they're his?
They're his. I was told this in no uncertain terms.
Also, wait a minute.
I was threatened, actually.
Yeah, first of all, he's on a diet, and I haven't seen him eat anything other than like salad for like 6 months. So guess what, Adam? They're not your meatballs
anymore.
Well, you
anymore. Know what? We left them. We have temporary custody of the meatballs.
Sure, whatever. He ceded custody, and they're ours now.
Well, there's some confusion there, and that's understandable. And it's the sort of thing you get in here in 2020 where they could be my meatballs, they could be your meatballs, they could be anybody's meatballs. The Astros might have cheated. They might not have cheated.
What does possession even mean, Adam?
They might have – well, it means 2 feet and a football move. I'm sorry. I'm still scarred from the NFL trying to figure out what a catch is. So Jim Crane – gave us the Adam Hill version of the meatballs. He said,
yes, he did.
He said, you know what? It's our World Series trophy. We're not giving it back because clearly the cheating did not have an impact, but it might have had an impact, but it didn't have an impact.
I never said it didn't have an impact.
But you know what? So if you don't know who Jim Crane is, Jim Crane is the owner of the Houston Astros, and I decided to do a little reading up on Jim Crane this afternoon because if you're going to talk about someone in the terms that I think we're going to talk about him, I think it's only fair that we have some understanding of who the man is. He is a self-made multi-bajillionaire who started a freight and logistics company and turned it into a much bigger company and then turned it into owning the Astros. He is a man who has pulled himself up and built a giant fortune, and he made all that fortune in business. And I get, Ryan, that in business, you can pretty much play the rules any way you want until you get caught. And in the end, they really can't take the money away from you. They can put you in jail if you do things really badly, but either you succeed or you don't. You're either McDonald's or you're not. You don't become not McDonald's because you did some things wrong in business.
Is it too old to drop an Enron reference?
Well, I think Enron's going to end up becoming a really good reference here as we talk about what goes on in the city of Houston. Jim Crane gave the first major press conference today since he sat up there in Houston and discussed the fact that he was firing the GM Jeff Luhnow and the manager A.J. Hinch after they were suspended by Major League Baseball for their part in the trash can banging code breaking scandal that has engulfed the offseason in baseball. And I would say that, in the words of Ray Ratto, who is a columnist in San Francisco, there was no staged apology today that was really going to work. However, this was not the one that was going to make it any better. Let's hear the beginning, the very first part of Jim Crane's explanation of whether he believes the Houston Astros World Series championship in 2017 was tainted.
You know, our opinion is, that this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
Okay, well, we'll leave it at that, except maybe we won't leave it at that, because then Jim kept going.
Did you say you feel like this didn't impact the game? And what do you mean by that?
I didn't say it didn't impact the game. Basically, you know, as the commissioner said in his report, he's not going to go backwards. It's hard to determine how it impacted the game, if it impacted the game, and that's where we're going to leave it.
It didn't impact the game. It's hard to determine how it did, and we don't know if. So, Ryan, I said earlier that Jim Crane was going to cover all bases, and I think that's what any good businessman does. You know, Michael Jordan said that, you know, Republicans buy sneakers too. And so, you know, sometimes you need to have the answer for everyone. And I think Jim Crane had the answer for everyone today.
Yeah, Adam, no one pays attention to business, right? I make an Enron reference. I don't even know how many people got that. Clearly much more important than the Houston Astros scandal. But point being is you can get away with that stuff in business. You can't get away with that stuff in baseball where you have – or sports – where you have dozens of other cities that are glued to their televisions, whether it be the Patriots in Spygate or whether it be the Astros with this – you have pissed off an entire nation, and you had weeks to get on the same page. And your response is that this didn't impact the World Series win for your Houston Astros. Okay, Jim. If I'm in that crowd, if I'm in the press, my first question is, why did you do it then? If it doesn't impact the game, if it has no bearing on your winning and losing, why did you risk the jobs of your GM, the jobs of your coach, and the reputations of your players, and really the reputation of your franchise going forward for decades to come? Because, Adam, the stain of this scandal is not going away. You as a Yankees fan, and I know you're not bringing that to this conversation, but whether you say it or not, you will feel it, right? Especially the Dodgers, who have way less world championships than you in the last, you know, 30 years, obviously since Kirk Gibson in 88 or whatever it was. But this is a huge deal. And Jim Crane, I feel like he just dug himself deeper and deeper into the controversial hole that the Astros already find themselves in.
Yeah, here's the thing I think Jim Crane underestimated today. This is not
that people care about baseball.
You're on it. It's emotion. Jim Crane has a background in business where things are cold and you do what you have to do to make money. And if people get run over in the way, I think you're used to the fact that everyone says, well, you know what? That's business. Yeah, you do run a baseball team like a business. But the Astros, in the culture of the entire organization, clearly took it way too far. And you can't get up there today and explain it away as, well, it's business, we had a good team. Yes, you know what? That's what insults all of us so much. They are an extremely talented team. Justin Verlander and Garrett Cole and Lance McCullers and Charlie Morton and all of the pitchers who've led the Astros to all of their success did not benefit from trash cans getting banged. Altuve and Springer and Correa, Bregman are players who don't need trash cans being banged and algorithms being run in order to succeed.
Yeah.
We know that. We know they're good. And now you took it and you went too damn far. And you underestimated the fact that you were going to piss off a lot of people along the way who are going to stay angry about it, who are going to stay mad about it. You know what? We could have dealt with the Astros either saying blanket no comment or getting out there today and falling on the sword. Anything in between, we were not going to be happy with. And, Ryan, I don't think you're happy with it either.
It's worst case scenario. And here's the thing. I'm a White Sox fan. Do you know how little this impacts me? Like, let's be real, right? I had no dog in this fight. It's unfortunate, and it calls into the question of the integrity of the game and who else is doing it and how are they cheating. But I can't imagine what a Dodgers fan feels like. I can't imagine what a Yankees fan feels like. I can't imagine what an AL West team feels like. If this was your division, do you know how livid I would be? And then to have Jim Crane come out and say something as stupid as, well, it didn't impact, you know, the fact that we won the World Series. Are you high? Did Texas legalize recreational marijuana and me not know it? Like, did I miss that memo? And maybe, like, Coke. Like, this isn't even a guy high on weed. This is outside any sort of realm of understanding that I can possibly grasp. Adam, you are so spot on when you say that literally almost any other response would have been better. Complete radio silence would have been better if you would have came out, honestly. And this is, we're going to have Pat Creighton on here in a little bit to talk about it. Pat Creighton from SB Nation Radio, which I actually do agree with that standpoint. They should have come out and flipped a double. I shouldn't say they should have. It would have been better what they did today. If they would have come out and flipped the double bird a la Stone Cold Steve Austin and said, screw you. Yeah, we cheated, and so do all of you. And so did Albert Bell, and so did George Brett, and so did the 1919 Black Sox. Cheating and baseball have run side by side for 150 years. We just did it better. So tough cookies, wah. That would have been a heel move. That I would have appreciated, almost, sort of. But to come out and to do it the way they did it today, what?
That's it, man, because you can take the heel turn perspective and basically say, you know what, we don't think we did anything wrong, and run with it, right? Like, people will accept that.
That's what the fans are going
to
do, right?
They will accept that. That's what their fans are going to do. Their fans will buy into that. But to go halfway, think about when, if you are someone out there listening to us right now, if you've ever been cheated on, if your wife, your husband, your significant other has ever cheated on you.
If your dog had too much fun at the babysitter's house and just came back and didn't love you as much.
Sounds like you have a personal problem there. But if someone who you're tight with betrayed you and you're going to choose to continue to be part of the relationship, if your choice is to try to forgive and move on, what do you want more than anything? You want to rebuild the trust. You want to feel like you know this isn't going to happen again. And what we want to know is, Astros, did you learn anything? Is this going to happen again? And what we're not getting is any real sense of contrition from them. And you're going to hear from Jose Altuve later on. You're going to hear a little bit more from Stephen A. Smith about the Astros. And you're going to hear these perspectives that make it clear that they didn't learn the lesson that we want them to learn. And you know what? Maybe they're not going to. And maybe that's what we need to accept. But you know what? Today just ripped the wound open a little bit more again.
Yeah, it absolutely did. And as we talk about, you know, hearing from the players, one thing that we didn't hear from the players today that absolutely drove me crazy. Yes, it felt like a PR statement. Yes, it felt like everybody was coming out and sort of saying the same thing. One of the things that they didn't say at all, zero mention of the Dodgers and Yankees and apologies to their fellow brethren for not only killing their chances at a World Series, but taking the value and the integrity of their game down a notch that we haven't seen in decades. Shame on all of them.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on three. One, two, three.
Raiders.
Home of the Raiders fan.
Yeah, well, anytime you're playing Stanley Cup champion, you know what you're getting. The record shows they're still, you know, a very elite team, even with some injuries. So, you know, this is going to be a good test for us to see where we fit against a team like that.
The Golden Knights take on the Blues tonight. And Pizza Rock Green Valley Ranch has the game on. Now, back to Cofield and Company.
We're right out here at Pizza Rock at Green Valley Ranch getting ready for the Golden Knights and the St. Louis Blues. Puck drop tonight at 7 p.m. Ryan mentioned earlier, you're out here, by the way, with Candy and Cofield on Thursday afternoon. Excuse me, Candy and McKinnell on Cofield and Company. Just too many consonants for me to get out there at one time. Ryan mentioned a few moments ago that Golden Knights are coming off one of the worst losses we've seen this year. Frankly, the kind of loss that could have gotten Gerard Gallant fired. Oh, I'm just kidding. That already happened. They have a 4-3-2 record under Pete DeBoer now, and 8 of those 9 games were on the road, which, as the Golden Knights told us earlier, is where they prefer to play all of their games for the rest of the season.
Home's not good.
You can't be home for too long. You get distracted. You know what? What if the dog goes to someone's house and plays with someone else and comes back and doesn't like you
as much,
right?
You get too much comfortable sleep in your own bed.
No. I mean, what if that Casper mattress, that Tempur-Pedic is just a little too soft?
We laugh about it. We really should have paid more attention to that. Because when you're looking for excuses or searching for understanding, and it's kind of like Jim Crane today, like when that's your logic and it's just so devoid of any sense of like logic and reason, huh?
I will be happy to drag them for that because this is an organization that has set a high standard right from the beginning of its existence, and that is not an excuse that lives up to the standard that this organization has put out there for itself. But they will now have a chance to show us that it was just a blip on the radar, and they are plenty capable of playing well at home, because the Golden Knights, with the exception of a February 23rd game on a quick back-to-back in Anaheim, are going to play all of their games at home through March 3rd. And this is an opportunity for the Golden Knights to separate themselves among the morass of teams in the Pacific and in the Western Conference here at the moment, starting tonight with a St. Louis team that, Ryan, as you mentioned earlier, dealing with a very scary situation where veteran defenseman Jay Bouwmeester collapsed from a cardiac episode on the bench. And I guess I'm kind of wondering where their heads are going to be when they take the ice tonight.
Well, I mean, it goes a couple ways, right? You could be shook and have that emotion impact you in a negative way, or you can rally around it and, you know, use it as a jumping off point. But one thing you can't deny is, or one thing you can't, I guess you can predict, or you not even predict, but you can point to, was how terrifying that was, you know, for them to go through. Just the details, reading it. Like a defibrillator was used? That is a very, very serious situation. I mean, 36 years old, by all accounts, a pillar of health. And, and again, it came on the father's road trip, or it was leading into that, right? So now there's a lot of emotion heading into this trip. It's going to be that way anyway. They talk about that with championship teams to begin with, right? When you're the championship team, you're always getting the best effort from your opposing team. So they knew that when they were coming into Vegas. I don't expect any Vegas flu or anything like that, right? They're a very good hockey team that expects to be getting the best effort from the Vegas Golden Knights, which I'm sure they're going to, because, Adam, as you mentioned, you know, this homestand Okay, it's basically there's 2 months left in the season. There's this month and next month. So if you're going to be home all this month, well, what does that mean for next month? It means you're going to be on the road. So you really, really need to secure some points here over the next few games, because if you don't, I know the Pacific Division is terrible, but no, not terrible, but as you said, a maelstrom, kind of clogged in the middle. Very few points to you know, separating the top and the bottom. So you got to pull away on some level. You've got to make the most of this homestand. And it really does start tonight, because you look ahead to these next few games. I mentioned it. Tampa Bay, New York Islanders, Washington Capitals. Yes, it's a homestand, and that's nice, but these are nightmare matchups, Adam.
No, these are really, really challenging matchups for the Golden Knights, and they're going to actually start it with Malcolm Subban tonight.
Yeah, which I like.
Subban will be in net. Will Carrier, Marc-Andre Fleury, both not on the ice at practice earlier. Golden Knights are going to have to manage Marc-Andre Fleury, I think, mentally and physically the remainder of the year. Things have not quite been the same for Marc-Andre Fleury since the loss of his dad. Not that that's an excuse, and I'm not making that excuse for him. I'm just stating the facts that when you look at how he's played.
The fact of the situation. Yeah. And it's not just the way he played, right? Let's look at some of the quotes he had after that. You know, the very fun-loving, the very jovial, the very, you know, childlike in so many ways, Marc-Andre Fleury, you know, talking about, well, I have less in front of me than I did before. More's behind me than it is in front of me, stuff like that. And then what the real kicker for me was, Adam, was when Fleury decided not to participate in the All-Star game, which, okay, on the surface, you know, it's fine, you know, load management, whatever term you want to use, but, Adam, you know this as well as anybody. Marc-Andre Fleury plays the game with a passion and an excitement level that few bring to the ice. As I mentioned just a few sentences ago, a very childlike demeanor when he hits the ice, and he was always a pillar of those All-Star games when he was elected. He's been elected to a few of them, but, you know, the shootout challenge, the breakaway challenge, he always had so much fun with that. And when he turned that down, it just seemed to go against like a lot of this. Ever since his father passed, it seems like a lot of this goes against what we would come to expect from Marc-Andre Fleury, and that's okay. Again, I'm just like you. I'm certainly not blaming him. I'm not saying that's an excuse. It's a fact of life. Something catastrophic happens like that. It doesn't matter if you're the starting goaltender of an NHL team. It can take years to get over. Sometimes you never get over it. So I don't think it's an excuse, Adam, but as you said, I think it's a fact of the situation, and I don't think there's any question Marc-Andre Fleury hasn't been the same since his dad passed away.
So Malcolm Subban has been a capable backup for a couple of years, right? And we know that the Golden Knights are just frankly looking for consistency right now. They're just looking to put together a run of play the way that we know that when they play at the high end of what they're capable of right now, we know that they can score 4, 5, 6 goals a game with those top three lines that they're rolling out there. We know what they're capable of. The problem this year, Ryan, has been that we just don't see it with any consistency. And when the defense lets them down, there is no chance. There is no opportunity to win games. So when you look at this homestand in totality, all the way up through March 3rd, which is going to bring you getting close to the trade deadline, What do you need to see from the Golden Knights over this homestand to feel like that consistency might just be there all the way through the playoffs?
I mean, you need to see wins. I know that's cliche, right? But this is something this team hasn't been able to do, really, is string together consistent wins. They've been very inconsistent up and down throughout the season. That's why they find themselves third in the Pacific and hovering under at 500, right? So I think it's something that you talked to, the team talked about at that loss to Minnesota. I think player accountability needs to happen in a very real way. Now, I'm not a part of that locker room, but it still feels like we're kind of developing since season one. I mean, there's no captain, right? I don't think that's a major issue, but I think it is indicative of the way this team is ran, that we don't really know who the leader is yet, or they don't want to say who, whatever the case may be, right? We need leadership. We need accountability. We need someone to go in there and essentially smack everyone in the face and be like, listen, this is a playoff team. On paper, this is a Western Conference favorite team. Like, this is one of the better teams in the Western Conference, and we're not playing like it. We said that, well, it was one of the critiques we had about Gerard Gallant, right? That when he famously said after a game, I think it was, I don't remember what game it was, but it was a couple games before he got fired, essentially saying, I'm not a rah-rah-rah guy. It's not my job to go in there and motivate people. And our genuine response was, obviously, well, whose job is it? If it's not the head coach's job, whose job is it? So I think he was saying the players, but I don't know if they have anyone in that locker room that is that, I mean, they do. They have plenty of leaders, but is there anyone, is there a leader in that locker room that feels enough like it's their team to come out and really get on them? Because the Minnesota game, I mean, that wasn't even Marc-Andre Fleury's fault. That was defensive. That was mental lapses. That was his team around him failing him, and that has really been the story. So, Adam, as you mentioned, the trade deadline. Okay, so you can talk about effort. You can talk about output and all the things that you may want to see. I want to see something that you've been saying forever. I want blue line help. I want a quicker stick. I want quicker skates out there. I want someone that can, you know, hammer and get to the center of the ice and actually get physical and make people uncomfortable, disrupt the zone, right? And that's to say McNabb can't do that. He can. England can do it. Stone can do it, right? But we need someone else, especially on the blue line.
If you're going to run the organization without a captain, which is certainly the prerogative of George McPhee and Kelly McCrimmon to do, yeah, right? They go ahead. That's your choice. Run it that way. You're basically saying this needs to be a player-led locker room, and you're saying that they need to hold each other accountable. And to some degree, Marc-Andre Fleury, we know, is the elder statesman of this team. He is the heartbeat of this team in a lot of ways. You don't put a C on the goalie's chest. It doesn't happen in hockey. So you know, to some degree, it's his locker room. Ryan, the hockey guy, was on with us last week, talked about the fact that he thinks that Marchessault could wear the C with the fiery demeanor that he has. We know that Mark Stone emotionally is the leader of this team. But the other piece of the equation is that by firing Gerard Gallant, the organization told us that they believe that, yes, the coach does matter. Yeah. And, yes, the coach does need to go into that locker room and change some things. And 4-3-2 from Pete DeBoer is not quite that yet. And I'm not here to judge him after 9 games.
No,
let's wait till the end of the season before we try to say anything about DeBoer's situation. But for the Golden Knights, if you're going to go without the C, then they need to hold each other accountable, and you've said that coaching does matter. And so we are going to be able to judge Pete DeBoer by that, because the organization has told us that that's the way we're supposed to look at it by the firing of Gerard Gallant. More coming up on the Golden Knights in a little bit. Next, though, we're going to talk more UNLV basketball with Donovan Stewart. What do the Rebels need to do over the next 4 games to get ready for the Mountain West Tournament? That's next on Cofield & Company.
Join the conversation on Twitter at Cofield & Co.
Amari goes right side. Amari gets fouled, lays it up and in, and no call. He got knocked down, and an incredible play as he was falling down to lay it in. But should have been a foul call there. Rebels by 4.
Now back to Cofield & Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
John Sandler on the Rebel Radio Network. They're talking about UNLV in its game last night against the Wolfpack of Nevada, Reno, Nevada, of UNR, Nevada, UNR, Nevada, Reno. I'm going to say all those things in Jim Crane style to make sure nobody gets mad at me
I think you covered all your bases.
I think all of those things cover what happened with the opponent last night. Wolfpack gets the victory, 81-78 in overtime. The Rebels had a 3-2 potentially tie the game.
Yeah.
At the end, that did not fall as UNLV has now dropped. 82-79, not 81-78. The Rebels dropped to 12-14 on the year. They've now lost 5 of their last 6. They did what they were supposed to do early on in Mountain West play. They took care of the softer part of their schedule, but the schedule has become a bit more challenging. And while the Rebels have played a number of close games in that stretch, they find themselves right in the middle of the pack in the Mountain West, and some opportunities to establish themselves as a team that might get that first day bye in the top 5 of the Mountain West Tournament have passed them by, unfortunately, for Rebel fans out there. They end up scoring 5 points in 5 minutes in the overtime period and lose at home to the rival Nevada of Reno of UNR Wolfpack. Donovan Stewart, former running Rebel, joins us here on Cofield & Company to talk a little bit more about the game last night. Donovan, thanks for taking the time, man.
Thanks for having me, Adam. Can you guys hear me okay?
We can hear you just fine, and we're happy to talk to you about the Rebels and last night's kind of heartbreaker, honestly, for UNLV. It felt like one of those games that they had multiple opportunities to really grab control of and get that victory and kind of solidify their place in the standings a little bit. When you look at the Rebels' performance last night, where beyond the obvious, and we know the free throws were a big deal, but do you see anything else in terms of what UNLV could have done to get the victory?
You know what? I've been, you know, and I think I've been this way all year. I've been excited about Coach Offenberger and what he's bringing, the culture that he's creating. You know, the fact that he took a stand early in the season, you know, I've been doing some video streaming games, and, you know, he took a stand that a lot of coaches are afraid to take at the beginning of the season going into conference play. You know, but I've been really proud of just the effort and the culture that I've been seeing for the Running Rebels this year. You know, last night, you know, watching that game, it was heart-wrenching. It's always heart-wrenching when you lose against, you know, UNR. You know, when I played for UNLV, I don't remember ever losing. In fact, I think the one time we lost, our coach got fired right after the game, which is not funny, but it's a reality of what happened. But, you know, the effort was good. You know, I was excited to see them fight back after really a rough start at the beginning of the game shooting the ball. You know, the one stat that sticks out at me is, you know, and I'm, you know, hopefully you guys can confirm this for me, but we took 39 threes last night, and, you know, so shot selection, you know, I think is one of the things that kind of stood out. Like, man, you know, this team is really, really talented when they're attacking the basket, when they're getting to the free throw line, even though they didn't shoot well from the free throw line. But, you know, I thought, you know, maybe some of the shot selection from the guys were a little bit off and could have maybe taken better shots. And, you know, at this point in the season, when you're playing such close games, you know, one possession here or there can really make a difference. But again, I was proud of their effort. I thought they really brought it. And I think ever since conference play, the beginning of conference play, they've been bringing it every night. They've been showing and putting in that effort. I'm really proud of seeing that out there from them. But they have to, you know, continue to learn from these, you know, every loss is a lesson. So continue to learn each game and each experience and try to get better for the next game and the next challenge.
Hey, Donovan, you brought up the three-point shooting numbers and the shot selection. That obviously wasn't perfect, as you said, certainly something that you can point to. And then the other thing that a lot of fans were pointing to, and something we brought up briefly when we brought you on, obviously, the under 50% from the free throw line. Listen, you played the game. You played the game, man. You said it. You like TJO, Coach Otzelberger. We like I like Otzelberger. I'm not going to speak for everybody on this show. I'm sure they do. It's still early in his tenure. But, you know, one thing we like about him is the passion that he has and the fact that he truly lives for basketball. Donovan, I don't think he's going to like that under 50% free throw shooting percentage. So, like, what usually happens when something is that poor coming off a rivalry game like that? What are these kids in for these next couple days?
Well, let me just say, you have one of the worst free throw shooters in UNLV history on the phone right now. So, I'm one to talk. I'm really one to talk. So, what's crazy is in high school, I was probably a 90% free throw shooter, but when I got to UNLV, they changed my shot a little bit and then my confidence went and I ended up being a really bad free throw shooter. But, you know, I mean, the reality is, you know, I think, for Coach Offenberger, it's important to give guys as much confidence and support as possible. And then, you know, I would be surprised if guys on that team didn't go after the game and to the Mendenhall facility and start working on their free throws immediately. So, you know, knowing some of those guys on the team, I can almost guarantee that some of them probably did that. So I think that's going to be, you know, over the next few days leading into the next game, a lot of free throw practice, a lot of conditioning combination with free throw practice, trying to get them running up and down, getting up and down, and then, all right, free throws. You know, so I think absolutely they're going to work on that. And I know, knowing Coach Offenberger, you know, he will emphasize that. And you'll see an improvement going into the end of the year.
Former Running Rebel Donovan Stewart joins us here on Cofield & Company talking about UNLV's overtime loss to the Wolfpack of Reno last night. Donovan, if I asked you off the top of your head if you remember what your free throw percentage was at UNLV, would you know?
I want to say it was between
43% and 40%.
See, I think. See, you're being too hard on yourself.
You guys have Google, right? I'm sitting in my car. Luckily,
Adam does have Google.
I have the power of Google. That's why I'm asking you. I have the power of Google. I'm going to choose to only take the first couple of seasons and say that in your first two seasons it was nearly 50%. I'm going to leave it right there for you.
Okay? Oh, man.
I'll leave it right there.
Thank you for doing that for me.
No problem. I'm happy to do that. You know, we heard Donovan from Marvin Coleman last night after the game and say, you know what, every loss hurts, but this one, of course, hurts more than most. And I heard you discuss earlier your success against the Wolfpack when you were playing here at UNLV. Take us inside the rivalry game like that. What's the feel for the team in the locker room, and what does it feel like when you're out there in that game, kind of regardless of record, when you're playing against those rivals?
Well, for you know, when I played back in 96, 97, 98, I'm one of the few kids that were there. I was there for 5 years. I was on the five-year plan, guys. So my first year, I was actually a medical redshirt freshman. And then I played out my 4 years there. I had back surgery my first year. But I just remember, we weren't in the same conference. It was a one game per year kind of a deal. There was a lot of passion with regards to the football and the cannon. You know, I mean, that was there as well. And we always, you know, were excited about that. But for us, we kind of looked down. I got to be honest. We kind of looked down at UNR, and it was like, listen, we better win this game. It better not even be a question. So it was. We definitely carried ourselves in a way that this is a game that we have to win. We have to compete. We got to dominate. And I think we did so. Maybe you can check Google again, but I think during that time. We played once a year, and I think we won three or four times in a row. And then in 2001, I remember going up to UNR, and we actually lost that game. And that night, Coach Bano came to us and told us, you know, the decision that the university had just made. And we were like, you know, sunken. We finished out the year with Coach Max Good that year. It was definitely something that we wanted to really represent, and do our best, and absolutely we wanted to absolutely dominate that game. So it is absolutely heart-wrenching to lose that one, and to, you know, just kind of look at how I have a lot of respect for UNR. I think it's a great university. I'm actually a high school counselor, so I'm always encouraging that students look at UNR as a great, you know, university that we have in the state of Nevada. But as far as on the basketball court and with that basketball program and UNR and the UNLV Running Rebels, it is definitely something that it's like, man, we just don't do that game. You know, no question.
Oh, no question about it. That game you mentioned in 2000, final was 82-71 up at Lawler Events Center. The Wolfpack winning that one. You know, Donovan, you played with some pretty impressive former Rebels. I was just looking through the list and seeing three guys who played in the NBA during your time there, in Keon Clark, Ty Nesby, and Sean Marion, and so on. Who do you remember as the best guy, the guy that you went out there on the court with and you were like, whoa, I can't believe what this guy can do?
Oh, man. I mean, Those three absolutely stand out, you know, and I have stories about all three. I mean, Keon Clark was probably one of the best teammates that you could have. Keon, he was kind of a loner, but you know, when we would get together, I remember, you know, he's the guy. He's 7 feet tall. He's got this huge wingspan, and he's trying to play the guards one on one. You know, so he would always have these little one on one battles with Keon after practice. But just an absolute, you know, good guy, and talk about a freak, you know, athlete, just 6'11", 7 foot, you know, major. I mean, he was getting his head on the rim. So, you know, he was definitely exciting. Tyrone, you know, Nesby, he was kind of the character, I think, of the crew. You know, he always wore the funny socks. He had the big personality. He would light up a room. With his personality, and he had so much, you know, skills. I thought he could have had a much longer and greater career, because at 6 foot seven, 6 foot eight, the skills that he had, be able to score off the dribble, be able to score one on one, you know, super talented, and he was at, you know, super athletic. And then Sean Marion, those two guys, Keon and Tyrone, they were at UNLV for 2 years. Sean Marion was there for one. He was a one and done kind of guy. And what's funny is that year, the beginning of the year, I actually started at forward. And then once Sean got going, I no longer started at forward. Sean was, you know, super athletic. You know, he's one of those guys that would, you know, a lot of people are talking about Zion Williamson now and how he jumps twice before people jump once. That was Sean Marion. And then when he, you know, when he got it going from outside or the mid range, you know, he would really, really get it going. I would say because of their NBA career, Sean absolutely, you know, was hands down the best player, you know, that I think I played with at UNLV. He's gone on and done some really, really great things. Obviously an NBA champion, you know, multiple, you know, year All-Star. You know, also you guys might not, or you might remember this, but Lamar Odom was here at UNLV, and for a full summer, you know, Lamar Odom, you know, was with us working out, open gym, you know, playing. He was pretty amazing to play with as well. He didn't make it to the court. He ended up transferring and going to Rhode Island, but he was also an amazing player to play with.
Wow, those are some huge names from Rebels past that you had the chance to take the court with, and we appreciate you sharing some of those stories, little insight into the Rebel program from years gone by. Is Donovan Stewart, former UNLV running Rebel under Bill Baino and Max Good. Donovan, thanks so much for the time, man.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right.
Appreciate it.
Wish you well. Fans out there, be listening next hour for the Sky Diamond Sounder. Caller 14, when you hear the sounder, will win a pair of VGK tickets and will be qualified to win our $1,000 Sky Diamonds gift card. Sky Diamonds, located in Town Square, where Las Vegas gets engaged.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.